This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Eaton Vance High Yield ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find smart bond selection from a specialized team with deep fixed income expertise. Get to know what's inside EVHY, the symbol of high yield done right, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC.
President Biden arrives in Israel as the fallout from an explosion at a Gaza hospital yesterday sparks protests and inflames the region.
It's a potential for a diplomatic meltdown. Only 2 weeks ago, we were talking about a giant normalization pact, a potential U.S. security assurances for Saudi Arabia, and now that doesn't seem to be likely to happen anytime soon.
Plus, China's economic headwinds continue, and Amazon moves to speed up already fast deliveries. It's Wednesday, October 18th. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. President Biden has landed in Tel Aviv to reaffirm U.S. support for Israel one day after a deadly blast at a hospital in Gaza. The high-stakes visit began to splinter even before he left Washington, with Arab leaders pulling out of a planned summit with Biden in Jordan as Israeli and Palestinian authorities remain at odds over who was responsible for the blast. Journal reporter Will Malden is in Israel, traveling with President Biden today. Will, take us back to the blast at the hospital in Gaza yesterday. What is the latest intelligence that we have on what caused that?
Well, it's a little bit early to say definitively what caused it, but it looks like both sides are saying different things. Israel is blaming it on Islamic Jihad rocket, while the Palestinian side is saying it was an Israel strike. So we don't have anything definitive enough to assign this. We do know Israel has been dropping bombs and attacking Gaza for some time. They warned that they would. So that's certainly a consideration. I just want to tell you, this is the kind of thing we were told by officials could happen, that there could be bad moments when Israel started its operations against Gaza. Yet it's happened worse and sooner than many had expected.
And Will, we have now heard from President Biden, and I want to play a clip. This is him saying that the blast at the hospital appears to have been done by, quote, the other team.
I was deeply saddened and outraged by the explosion at the hospital in Gaza yesterday. And based on what I've seen, it appears as though it was done by the other team, not you. But there's a lot of people out there not sure. So we've got to overcome a lot of things.
Will, how should we interpret that?
Of course, the strike was so upsetting that U.S. officials are wondering what it would mean if Israel were implicated in the strike. The National Security Council is looking to gather facts in the U.S. to see, you know, who they believe is responsible. There's already humanitarian scrutiny from the UN and others in Gaza Strip. This will only add to that. And of course, obviously, if there's some kind of wanton attacks that are targeting civilian infrastructures or something on purpose, that would, of course, be beyond the pale for what U.S. officials have said is the general rules of war that democracies follow.
All right, so more details still to come on this hospital attack, and yet this has already affected Biden's visit.
Well, this has taken everyone by storm. I was with Secretary Blinken and his crowd in Amman, Jordan last night, and there were immediate questions about whether the trip would continue as planned, President Biden's trip. And of course, it's not proceeding as planned because he's not going to be stopping in Amman, Jordan, to meet Jordan's king and Egypt's president and the Palestinian Authority president. That has been put off and replaced by telephone calls.
So, Will, how does that affect then what the White House thinks can be achieved here if a face-to-face meeting complementing standing in solidarity with Israeli leadership is not possible?
Well, that's exactly right. That was meant to complement the Israeli side because Biden, of course, will say that the U.S. stands with Israel, which is U.S. policy, but also wanted to stand shoulder to shoulder with Arab leaders to show that he cared about their considerations, refugee issues, humanitarian issues that have been so big during Secretary Blinken's visit to the region and may only get bigger. Biden's trip to Israel was sort of agreed upon at around the same time that Secretary Blinken and others worked out with Prime Minister Netanyahu a basic framework to get civilian aid into Gaza from Egypt. And it seems like they may be very close to a pact where Israel would get out of the way and let convoys through without fear of being targeted, because certainly those borders are very sensitive places. President Biden may announce that later today, that some convoy trucks are moving, but we don't know that for sure. That's something that a special envoy, Satterfield, has been negotiating the last few days. And that's a big deal. It shows that the U.S. is, you know, kind of pushing on the humanitarian side at a time when Israel is more focused, of course, on defeating Hamas.
And Will, there are some pretty key bilateral dynamics to watch here as well, including with Saudi Arabia, the kingdom, now saying that a normalization with Israel could be dead in light of recent events. Are U.S. officials concerned about that, that we may be seeing some sort of broader degrading of diplomacy amidst this conflict?
Definitely. I mean, it's a potential for a diplomatic meltdown. What we're seeing is a real effort to strengthen those relationships, which the Biden administration and the Trump administration before it has sought to work on, between Arab countries and Israel and between Arab countries and the U.S. Only 2 weeks ago, we were talking about a giant normalization pact, a potential U.S. security assurances for Saudi Arabia. And now that doesn't seem to be likely to happen anytime soon. Of course, these Arab countries, some of them, especially the ones closest to Israel, are worried about street protests and violence as well.
Right. It has been a night of protest across the Arab world, Will. For instance, we heard one in Ramallah, which turned violent. Will, you were at a separate protest in Amman. What was that like?
Well, certainly. I went out to the protests, which had started near the Israeli embassy in Amman, Jordan, right near the West Bank. I heard people saying they supported Hamas, a lot of young men chanting with Palestinian headscarves, and a lot of protests against Israel. I had protesters tell me that Biden wasn't welcome here. A lot of frustration, even with Palestinian Authority President Abbas. Yeah. So this was just one piece of what's happening around the region, and something that Arab leaders are worried about and something that the U.S. is worried about, some kind of meltdown in what was believed by the Biden administration to be a fairly stable situation in the Middle East.
And just on public opinion, what does the administration make of broad public sentiment around the region on this crisis?
During the trip with Secretary Blinken, officials told us that some of this could be expected. Israel is very determined. Israel is very hurt by the assault from Hamas, very determined to try to root out Hamas. And there's just a widespread understanding that there's going to be some painful moments in that. The Biden administration says they want zero civilian toll, but realistically, that's not going to happen. And so what you're going to get is uprisings. The Muslim Brotherhood, which is present in some countries, is closely related to Hamas. Even bigger and more immediate threat that Biden administrations are worried about is Hezbollah in Lebanon and Syria, taking actions against Israel that could even draw the U.S. into the conflict. Certainly no one is seeing that happen right now, but that's a warning that's on everyone's lips.
That was the Journal's Will Malden traveling with President Biden in Israel today. Will, thank you so much for the update.
Thank you.
Coming up, we'll get an update on what China's economic growth means for the rest of the world and look at Amazon's high-tech plans to get your package to you even faster. Those stories and more after the break.
This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Eaton Vance High Yield ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find smart bond selection from a specialized team with deep fixed income expertise. Get to know what's inside EVHY, the symbol of high yield done right, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC.
Israel's war with Hamas is starting to dim global economic growth expectations. Preliminary results from Oxford Economics' Global Risk Survey found that one in three respondents say that events in the Middle East pose a very significant near-term economic risk. That concern has already contributed to an overall decline in global growth expectations since a previous survey in September. While also key to global growth is China's economic trajectory. The country's third quarter GDP figures came out overnight and painted a mixed picture in a year that should have seen China's COVID reopening fueling growth around the world. Instead, China's economy expanded by just 4.9% compared to the same period last year and down from 6.3% in Q2. The journal's Stella Ifan Shia is in Hong Kong. Stella, how should we interpret this release? This 4.9% was better than many forecasts, and yet we report that other headwinds are growing. It sounds like a little bit of a mixed bag.
Hi, Luke. Yes, after a period of weakness in the summer, Chinese economy may be finally turning a corner. The retail sales were particularly strong, indicating, you know, household spending has improved quite a bit. Labor market condition also is showing signs of improvement. That said, there are still drags in the economy. Primarily, exports continue to sink as Western consumers spend more on services instead of goods. Real estate sector continue to shrink, and for China, the risk of deflation is still on the horizon. So broadly speaking, these headline figures send reassuring message that the darkest moment for China's economy may be behind us for now.
So that may be the case, but what will it actually take for China to return to a stronger growth trajectory in the future, and particularly one that could be capable of driving the global growth engine?
Right. So as upbeat as today's figure are, that's probably also where the good news ends. That's primarily because we're still in the middle of an epic property bust. And the downside from such a property-driven growth model will hit the economy much more severely next year. Another concern is the economy continues to be haunted by effects from zero COVID restrictions. We saw that investment appetite among private companies remains low, and households, overall speaking, are still pretty cautious about spending, and they prefer to save more. So the fact that the economy seems to be stabilizing is good news for the world. But looking forward, for China to really drive global growth, that will depends on whether the country can rebalance its own economy, and that remains to be seen in the coming months.
That was the journal's Stella Ifan Shia in Hong Kong.
Thank you so much.
Russia is increasing its nuclear capabilities in Belarus. Wall Street Journal analysis of satellite images and state media footage has found Iskander missiles at military training grounds in Belarus. Those missiles are only manufactured in Russia and are capable of launching nuclear weapons. While it's difficult to know if Russia has transferred actual nuclear warheads, it shows Russia's expanding capability to launch them outside of its borders, right on Ukraine and NATO's doorstep. Amazon is adding firepower to its efforts to speed up already fast package delivery. Facing fresh competition in the United States from the likes of Shein and Temu, the company is turning to new AI-equipped sorting machines and robotic arms that will operate alongside humans. Amazon said the tech will speed order fulfillment by up to 25% and reduce the time to identify and store inventory by up to 75%. Journal reporter Sebastian Herrera says it's not clear if the systems will affect Amazon's headcount, and that for now, company officials are emphasizing safety benefits at warehouses where it has long struggled with high turnover and repetitive stress injuries among workers.
Amazon is promoting that instead of reaching up to grab items in these large shelves, these items are going to be coming to employees more in what's known as the power zone, which is basically around the hip area. And they believe that will eliminate all of these repetitive stress injuries and will just make it more ergonomic for workers to do their jobs. So to be able to take this big next step in automating its warehouses more, it's big because of just the scale that Amazon operates, you know, delivers billions of packages each year. And to make it even a little bit more efficient is important to them for speed purposes. It's a pretty significant change in the Amazon world.
And Elon Musk's X platform, formerly known as Twitter, has started testing a new subscription model called Not a Bot in New Zealand and the Philippines. As a part of that plan, new users would have to pay $1 annually in order to post, like, or perform key functions on the site, with non-paying new users having limited read-only access. Existing users would be unaffected. Musk posted on X after the test was announced, saying, quote, "It's the only way to fight bots without blocking real users." And that's What's News for Wednesday morning. Today's show was produced by Kate Bullivant and Mohsen Ali. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kilhoff, and I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We will be back tonight with a new show. Until then, thanks for listening.